The Exchange Daily Podcast is brought to you by
Doucette Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, equal housing opportunity.
Enjoy the show.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Earlier this month, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh and a group called Boston 2024 convinced the U.S. Olympic Committee that Beantown should be the American bid in the international competition to host the Summer Games. Here's Mayor Walsh in his State of the City speech.
Our vision of a 21st century, affordable, sustainable games went up against the nation's greatest cities, and we won.
But now Olympic backers need to convince their fellow Bostonians, and that could be a tough task. Last week, the Boston Globe reported that two referenda efforts are underway, both promoted by Olympic opponents. And on Monday, Massachusetts lawmakers weighed in, with many sounding a little edgy about the money that could be involved and the distraction that the Olympics might create, diverting attention away from problems like education and health care. Meanwhile, here in the Granite State, Southern Tier communities especially are pondering the impact of this giant global event being held such a short distance away. Today in The Exchange, Olympic dreams and doubts in Boston and in New Hampshire. Let's hear from you. How do you feel about the prospect of Boston hosting the Summer Games 9 years from now? What might be in it for the Granite State? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We begin the hour with Mark Arsenault. He's a reporter for the Boston Globe. He's been covering this. Mark, thank you very much for being here.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
Well, Mark, as the mayor said in that clip, Boston was competing against other great cities, San Francisco, Los Angeles, D.C. When this announcement came out just a few weeks ago, Mark, were you surprised?
A little bit surprised. I mean, you would have to think that Los Angeles would have been a bit of a favorite in that L.A. has hosted the Games twice, very successfully in the past, in 1932 and in 1984. In fact, the 1984 Games were one of the most successful in Olympic history that actually turned a couple hundred million dollars in profit. So they have a lot of the facilities, they have the Olympic legacy, and they have a permanent group that bids for the Olympics, well, with the city's help, pretty much every time the Olympics are available. So there's they're used to it. They're accustomed to it. And I sort of thought L.A. might be a slight favorite.
Yeah. And how about people just in general in the Boston area? Did the whole city kind of go, whoa? Or did some people say, yeah, I knew we'd get it?
I think very few people said, yes, I knew we'd get it.
Really?
At the very least, you're competing against Los Angeles, San Francisco, two well-known international cities, and Washington, D.C., which is probably our best-known international city, maybe for good or for ill. I think Boston would have to have been considered, if not an underdog, certainly not a favorite.
Well, and let's bring another voice into our conversation, Mark. Chris Dempsey joins us by phone, the co-chair of No Boston Olympics, a group that's been organizing opposition to the Olympics. Chris Dempsey, welcome.
Thank you for having me on.
Well, why don't you want the Olympics?
When you look at the history of Olympics in other cities, and this is both in the U.S. and around the world, they really haven't left cities better off. Economists have studied this, and they see no long-term benefits to the economy. And often these cities or host governments are left with billions of dollars of debt and expenses that could be better spent elsewhere. You know, Mark brought up the example of Los Angeles in 1984, and, you know, he's absolutely right that that was a game that was profitable, but there were two key differences there. The first is that Los Angeles was the only credible bidder for the games, and so they really dictated to the IOC the terms of the agreement. The second is that Los Angeles did not provide the financial guarantee, the public guarantee that the IOC required, again, because they had that negotiating leverage. If Boston were going to do the same, you know, we think we'd be in a much better position. But the sad reality is that we're entering an auction environment where the games goes to the highest bidder, and the public is going to be left holding the bag.
Well, and organizers promise, and I'm sure you know this, Chris, that a Boston Olympics would be sustainable, walkable, privately funded, and that these do fit into the broader goals of the International Olympic Committee, which now wants cities to kind of be streamlined. They're not exactly saying scale back, but, you know, they recognize the financial concerns. They don't want cities to run up huge costs, end up with white elephant stadiums. What do you think, Chris? Is it possible we're in a new, more responsible era when it comes to putting on these games?
You know, the IOC and the USOC have said that, but they haven't really done anything to demonstrate that it's actually a different world. The claim that these games are privately funded is just not accurate. The Boston 2024 group put their bid documents out last week, and $4.7 billion they claim will be privately funded, but that's only $4.7 billion out of $14.3 billion that they identify in costs. That includes $3.4 billion in public-private partnerships. They've only identified one partner for those partnerships, and that's a public partner. $5.2 billion in state infrastructure, and then another billion-plus in security costs that would be picked up by taxpayers. So it's actually less than half of the cost of the games would be privately funded.
So a couple billion, more than a couple billion there, Chris, that you say is not accounted for.
That's absolutely right. And there's just huge holes in this budget document that they put out last week.
Well, and later on in the hour, we will have someone from Boston 2024 joining us. So we'll talk to him about the financial concerns, which others are raising, not just you. Here's another question, though, I did want to ask you, though, Chris. Shirley Leung, the Boston Globe business columnist, made the point that even just making the bid and competing with other cities can light a fire under city leaders to look at their problems, make improvements. She used New York City's bid as an example, saying even just making the bid, even though it failed, helped New York look at itself and, you know, who are we and what do we want to be? I'm sure you saw that column. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, that's an incredibly risky civic strategy. And what that's saying is if you bid and fail, there's still some potential for good outcomes. But there's very few experts that say it's a good idea to bid to begin with. You know, we do need to have a robust conversation in Massachusetts about who we want to be and how we want to invest. And we do need to think big. It's incredibly important that we think big, but we also need to think smart. And when you look at the history of games in other cities, it's very clear that bidding for and hosting the Olympics is not smart public policy.
Well, and if you could, Chris, just stay with us for a minute. Mark Arsenault, something Chris says, we need to have a robust conversation. Is that part of the problem, Mark, that some of this took place among certain groups and wasn't shared more broadly with the public? Is that an issue?
I think it has been an issue. The United States Olympics Committee, which has been, which is the group that chooses the U.S. Nominee for the whenever the United States is going to compete for the Games, somewhat put the clamps down on all four of the bid cities for a period of a number of months. I know in Washington especially, there was a lot of criticism that the Washington 2024 group had been overly secretive, and I think the Boston groups got some of that as well. So this is the time that Boston 2024 needs to put out their documents as they did and be as transparent as possible. There's no more excuses. The USOC is not putting the clamps down anymore.
Yeah, and there was a gag order? I don't know what else to call it, that city workers weren't supposed to speak ill of the games?
There was, and Mayor Walsh signed an agreement with the USOC which said that employees of the city should not badmouth the games. I mean, Walsh has since clarified that and said that people can say what they want. He's not going to do anything about it. And I haven't heard anyone who's been told not to speak. So
that wouldn't go over real big in the home of the American Revolution, would it, Mark? Yeah, it doesn't really fit with the culture of the city. But speaking, Chris Dempsey, on the public chiming in, what's the latest on a possible referendum from your group?
So we're looking at a referendum potentially at the city level or at the state level. And there's actually another group led by Evan Falchuk, who is a gubernatorial candidate here, that's already pursuing the statewide ballot initiative. So I think we're likely to see it on the ballot in 2016, but potentially City of Boston voters could see it on the ballot as soon as November 2015. That's something that we're still exploring. We think it's incredibly important for the people that would be impacted by these games and pay for these games that they have a voice in this process. They haven't had one to date. And despite the fact that there are now public meetings and more transparency, there's absolutely no sense that the public has an opportunity to actually influence the plans or influence the bids. It's more, okay, here's what we decided, and now we're going to show you, rather than giving you a democratic way to weigh in. You know, even in a world where the ballot initiatives go forward and, you know, the games do pass, it will be important because it will force the boosters to actually engage with the public and sell this idea to the public. Right now, they're entirely focused on selling it to the IOC, which is about 100 unelected people from all over the world whose motivations and incentives are very different from the long-term incentives and goals of citizens here in Massachusetts.
One last question for you, Chris, and I really appreciate your time. The vision painted by backers, and I was looking at this yesterday, you know, it's lovely, these beautiful venues and, you know, sparkling. They make the Charles River look like the Caribbean. It's so blue and pretty. But, you know, they talk about walkable. This will improve transportation. This will improve infrastructure. They talk about the games being the most sustainable ever. If the buildings aren't used, they'll tear them down and recycle every last brick. And, of course, the games are exciting for a lot of people. How do you avoid, Chris, coming across as sort of grouchy naysayers to a global event that get a lot of people really excited?
Look, we love Boston, and we even like the Olympics. You know, the Olympics are a really fun time. The 3 weeks of the Olympics would be a great celebration for Boston. Our issue is with the 9 years of construction projects leading up to it that are not construction projects that are actually going to make us better and more productive as a society. And then the years of debt you have afterward that will take away from much more important priorities like schools and healthcare and education. You know, Boston is a phenomenal city that we have a lot going on. There are great opportunities here to enjoy sports, to enjoy entertainment, to get a great education. And we think that those are really what's going to make Massachusetts and Greater Boston the place to be in the decades ahead, not this 3 week event that, while very fun, is actually very costly and very poor public policy.
So worried about that Olympic hangover, as some
That's
people
exactly
call
right.
it, Chris. All right. Well, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Chris Dempsey, co-chair of No Boston Olympics, a group that's been organizing opposition to the bid. Later on in the hour, we'll hear from some supporters of the Boston Olympics. Mark Arsenault is also with us, reporter for the Boston Globe. And just a sampling of the comments from our Facebook page on the question, yes or no, are you in favor of Boston's Olympic bid? John says two types of people like this idea, those who don't have to sit in traffic to see it, and those who are making money from it. Another John says, yes, I think it would be good for the region. Tim says it would be a better financial plan to set up barrels on every street corner in the city and burn money 24/7 than to host the Olympics. More entertaining as well. Thanks for those Facebook comments. We'll take more of your comments after a short break, and you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking south to the Bay State at the debate over whether Boston should host the 2024 Olympics. As you probably heard, Boston was chosen earlier this month as the U.S. candidate to host the 2024 Summer Games. We've been looking at some of the arguments, pro and con, happening in Boston. Let's hear from you. How do you feel about this Olympic bid? Do you think it would be good for New Hampshire or not? 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Mark Arsenault is with us for the hour. He's reporter for the Boston Globe. He's been covering this issue. And Mark, before we go back to our listeners, I did want to mention something that I've heard a fair bit. Big dig number two, that this is just going to be another disaster and Boston is really just recovering from that first big dig. What's the discussion there?
Well, I mean, I think people at this point should think of the around Boston, think of the big dig as the ultimate in a giant project that got out of hand. However, the end result, no one would ever want to go back to the way Boston was before. I mean, the end result is it has made a big difference and improvement in Boston, although getting there was very difficult.
So it was painful, but everybody says it was worth it.
I don't know anyone who doesn't think the big dig was worth it.
Here's an email that just came in from Tom, who says the announcement about hosting the Olympics in Boston came to many as a huge surprise. Can your panelists explain the background of when and how this movement developed? Is it being promoted as a jobs bill by the powerful Massachusetts unions or construction contractors? Economically similar to the proposals to legalize gambling, these schemes, Tom says, rarely deliver on promises made by the promoters. So Tom's kind of asking a great question. Thank you, Tom. Where did this whole idea come from? Can you answer that, Mark?
Well, I mean, if you want to go back as early as the 1970s, at least, former Mayor Kevin White told the USOC that he was interested in having Boston bid for the Olympics and, in fact, had the city conduct an inventory of potential venues, but after a couple of months decided that it just wasn't feasible. That would have been for the 84 games, in fact, that went to Los Angeles. And then more recently, I think this effort, very serious effort, grew sort of in mid-2013, end of 2013, when the idea was picked up by some really influential business people around Boston, including John Fish, who is the head of Suffolk Construction, and Dan O'Connell, who was a former Deval Patrick administration cabinet member, and others, and they started being in touch with the USOC and thinking about venues. They brought in some architects who gave some of their time pro bono. They brought in other transportation experts. Ed Davis, the former commissioner of Boston Police, kind of came on as an advisor on security matters, and it grew from there.
So big construction moguls have pushed this, to answer Tom's question.
Well, John Fish is head of Suffolk Construction, which is one of the most prominent construction companies in Boston. However, John has recused his company, I should say, from any Olympic-related construction. So his company, he said, would not be bidding on any Olympic-related construction.
Interesting. So kind of taking himself out of it to
yes.
make his interest look pure. You know, Tom asks another question in his email, and thank you, Tom. He says, where does former Governor Romney sit on this? He rescued the Salt Lake City Games, as I recall. Do you know, Mark?
I talked to Romney about this quite a while ago, actually, when this effort sort of first became public, when I think we broke that story in October of 13. And Romney had been very supportive of Boston holding the Olympics and had been sort of an unofficial advisor to the group in its early days. I'm not sure now what his current role is or how much contact he has with local 2024 people. And, of course, Mitt Romney is now preparing potentially another presidential run, so I'm assuming he's probably more focused on that.
Well, we'll have to go to Wolfboro, New Hampshire, right, to find out. So.
Yeah.
Let's take some calls, Mark. Tom, thanks for that email. Our email address is exchange@nhpr.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Dominic joins us from Ringe. Hi, Dominic. You're on the Exchange. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'd like to say two things quickly. I don't believe that there's been a modern Summer Games that has turned a profit anywhere. And last fall, I took a trip to China, where privately we saw some of the former Olympic facilities. And when we spoke to some of the Chinese citizens over there privately, they admitted that things get done in China because there really isn't any argument or political debate about anything. But the facilities and the venue are essentially underused, falling into disrepair, and have not been a profit for the Chinese people other than their national pride.
So white elephants that just sit there afterwards, Dominic, you're saying it's not worth it?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Thanks for calling in. You know, we keep hearing this phrase, Mark Arsenault, white elephants, but the Olympic organizers in Boston anyway say no, no, no. Most of these facilities are already up and running, right? They plan to use college facilities.
Right. Yeah, and we should probably make a distinction between Olympic bids in many foreign countries and Olympic bids in the United States. If we go back to the history of the Olympics in the U.S., and I can bore your readers on this, your listeners for an hour on this, but very quickly, it used to be that the U.S. government did put a pretty significant amount of money into the Olympics, the 32 games in L.A., for example. But when you got a little bit more contemporary, that sort of stopped, and especially with the 1976 Denver Olympics. And many people forget that Denver actually won the right to host the Winter Olympics in 1976. But 2 years later, after winning the games, they had to back out because of a vote which pretty much forbid public money to going to them. 1984, the L.A. games in 1984, in the late 70s when L.A. was going for the games, there was actually a local referendum that forbid or heavily restricted, almost completely restricted public money going to the games. That passed, but yet L.A. was able to go forward and hold those games, but they were forced to do it on a new model, which was essentially the privately funded model with very little government help. Things have changed somewhat since then, but still that is the way that the Olympics have to be done in the United States. There's not going to be a big, significant influx of public money, as there was in Beijing. Those games probably cost $40 billion, essentially they would cost about $4 billion to sort of run the games, sort of operate the games during those 16 days, and the Paralympics that follow for 10 days or so after that. And then the entire rest of that budget, which would have been about more than $30 million, goes to building stuff. So when we think about the way the games are done in the United States and the way they would have to be done in Boston, the operating budget for the games, which is running the things and, you know, many of the temporary venues, that's about $4.5 billion. Anything, and that is privately funded and would come from broadcast revenue, ticket sales, things like that. Not that there aren't risks with that, but that is the way that they intend to fund it. Outside of that is a whole separate budget, which is building stuff. The 2024 people are going to depend on local colleges to provide some of the venues, upgrade some of their venues if possible. The UMass Boston, for example, which wants to add dorms, is going to be considered to become the Olympic Village, much of the same way Georgia Tech became the Olympic Village for the 1996 Atlanta Games. Beyond that would be any public infrastructure spending that the state might want to do ahead of the games. I'm told by...
Well, and Mark, let me jump in on you for a second. I do apologize. But on this financial question, we do have Rich Davey now on the phone with us. He's CEO of Boston 2024. And Rich Davey, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, and a lot of people here in New Hampshire anyway kind of said, wow, when Boston won that U.S. bid. Just summarize the case, if you could, please, that Boston made before the U.S. Olympic Committee that put it over the top, over San Francisco,
sure.
Los Angeles, D.C.
Well, I don't think New Hampshire folks were alone. I think we said wow too. I said wow. I mean, I've been in the job for 4 days now, and came on board after the city was the U.S. designee. So I was watching it as an excited citizen and resident of Boston, and thrilled to join. I think a few things. I mean, as Mark points out, the growing trend were to unsustainable games. Beijing and Sochi are examples, but I think the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, put out a vision statement in December, which talked about really bringing the games back to more being one, much more focused on the athletes, which is really what we need to be thinking about. And then two, the legacy, the sustainable legacy of the Olympics, so that there aren't these empty white elephants sitting in large urban areas, but we could reuse. And so I think Boston, frankly, our bid really was ahead of the curve. We talked about a livable, walkable Olympic Games that, as Mark said, uses lots of the college and university facilities, dorms and fields and field houses for folks to practice and to compete. So obviously we've got a great transportation system, a backbone that is going to be upgraded over the next several years that we can use as well. So I think that and our love of sports, I mean, I think Boston, we really think of ourselves as, you know, New England, and the love of sports that we all have in New England around even our Super Bowl team this weekend is unparalleled. So I think galvanizing that kind of support and strength really brought our bid over the top.
Well, and big events like Head of the Charles, Boston Marathon, and so forth. So although this is way, way, way bigger, and the concern that we keep hearing from our listeners, Rich Davey, and from Chris Dempsey, who we talked to before, the co-chair of No Boston Olympics,
sure, is
about the money, $4.5 billion in private money. But boy, it's going to probably cost more than $4.5 billion. So where does the rest of that come from? Taxpayers don't want to be saddled with this.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's not going to. So, you know, we're a couple things. One is the transportation. In my previous job, I was transportation secretary and ran the MBTA. So I'm very intimately have knowledge of the transportation sort of plan over the next 10 plus years. You know, all of that is happening today, and that will support the Games. Frankly, whether the Games come or not, there are a number of infrastructure projects that are happening in and around the Boston area that have to happen. And so we're building a Games around those projects that can be complementary and support the Olympic Games here in Boston. So that's one. I mean, those projects are already in the pipeline. In terms of the, but your point, in terms of the Olympic village and the stadium and some of those other venues, no, that would be privately financed through sponsorships, through ticket sales, through TV revenue. Those are the things that generally support the Games and have in the past. And, you know, I think a lot of folks talk about the recent, probably more poor examples, but places like Los Angeles in 1984 ultimately delivered and continues to deliver a small surplus to the city each year out of an endowment for youth sports. So I think that, you know, that's what we're driving toward. I mean, look, if this is about the biggest, most expensive facilities, Boston is not going to win. We wouldn't want to win. But that's not where the Olympics are headed today. It's much more around a sustainable Olympic Games, and that's why I think we are where we are.
People keep talking about sleeker, more sustainable. You know, I was interested to read about this idea of walkable Olympics, but is there enough places where you could hold the big events within walkable distances? I mean, there's a lot of different stuff. There's rowing, and there's, I don't know, fencing and sailing. I think I read something about sailing in Rhode Island. So how do you make it walkable?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So, you know, we have two clusters in the city that we've proposed, our university cluster, so around Boston University, around Harvard, around MIT, for things like tennis to archery to an aquatic center. And then shifting closer to sort of downtown in South Boston, our Olympic Stadium, where we would have our opening and closing events, obviously, and our track and field as examples. The marathon would be run within the city. We would look at doing the modern pentathlon in the city. And there would also be connectivity to transit as well. There's talk of potentially putting a velodrome in Somerville, although the other balance we have is that these are all proof of concepts. And so if there are communities that are concerned, you know, we also have backup plans as well. Certainly there are some places we've proposed that aren't walkable. Lowell is proposed to host some of our rowing activities. You can take commuter rail there, obviously, so you can take public transportation. And Foxborough Stadium, obviously, folks won't be walking to Foxborough. But again, we have commuter rail opportunities. Folks could take public transit to there to see soccer, for example. So I think, for the most part, we've really identified most of the primary and majority number of our venues in the downtown area within 5 kilometers. So walking, taking the MBTA, using bike share are all ways that folks can get around the city.
Well, and you mentioned the velodrome. I have to read this email to you, Rich. It
sure.
comes from Bruce. He says, Frank DeFord's recent cynical take on Boston hosting the Olympics ended with the IOC leaving an empty velodrome behind. Bruce says, a friend of mine dreams of building a velodrome in Claremont, New Hampshire. Bruce says, let's get on board. But here's another one from Jordan in Auburn, New Hampshire. He says, I'm moving to Boston soon. And while it's an exciting prospect for my new home city to host these noble games, it would grind the city's already congested public transit and roads to a halt with all the visitors. And I know I'd never be able to afford the tickets, which would sell out instantly anyway. Jordan says, so close yet so far, plus immobility, would make it a real downer. What about that? I know
sure.
my two boys, when I talked about the possibility of Boston Olympics, they said, can we go? Can we go? Can we go? And I had some of the same concerns. Could we get there? Could we afford it?
So let's talk about getting there. Absolutely. And tell your boys we want them to be there, okay? And Jordan, too, by the way. So a couple things on getting there. I mean, one is that, you know, the proposed time is obviously in the summer of 2024, so July and August, when, frankly, traffic is actually down about 5 or 10%, as is ridership in the MBTA. So there's bandwidth there, for sure, to accommodate folks. Two is one of our strategies may be using college dormitories. You know, there are 250,000 students that come to Boston each year for college. Obviously, they won't be here, or many won't be here in that time frame. And then lastly, you know, we are adding capacity on our transit system. And so Green Line of Somerville, for example, buying new red and orange line cars, there'll be additional capacity there. I mean, look, another way I describe it, so I personally live about 6 blocks from the marathon finish line. There are 30. There were 32,000 runners last year at the Boston Marathon, and over 1 million spectators. The entire Olympic athlete group will be less than half of that. There will be less than half of the runners that come to the Boston Marathon. So I think if you told folks, hey, let's shut down some roads, let's have 1 million people and 30,000 athletes show up in April, people would say, what are you, crazy? And the answer is we do it every year. We've done it very successfully for 118 years. So,
well, one last question for you, Rich. Yeah, and, apologize for jumping in on you there, but you said transit, and that piqued a lot of interest here in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. Any discussion, thought about getting a rail line from Boston up to Nashua as part of this idea of sort of spreading the Olympic wealth and spreading the Olympic traffic?
Sure. So we have not had, you know, 2024 has not had those conversations with the state. I can tell you in my previous job when I was transportation secretary for Governor Patrick, I know we did talk to Governor Hassan's team about rail possibilities to New Hampshire, to Manchester, to Nashua. Look, I'm a big fan. I think, you know, the citizens in New Hampshire have to think about that because that's certainly resources and operations that, you know, that New Hampshire would have to pay for, so I know there's a debate about that. But I'm a huge fan of rail. I head up to New Hampshire to visit friends all the time, 93. You know, I know it's being widened in New Hampshire. Build it and they will come. I mean, traffic will continue. So there's got to be alternative, my opinion, alternative ways to get around. And I think rail is a great opportunity. And look, if New Hampshire's interested and Massachusetts is interested, I think it would be a great opportunity to even maybe try it out during the Olympics, you know, as a pilot basis.
Okay. Well, Rich Davey, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right. Bye-bye. That's Rich Davey, CEO of Boston 2024. That's the group, again, promoting the Boston 2024 Summer Games. Boston still has to compete against several other cities internationally, including Paris and Berlin. Mark Arsenault is staying with us. We will be back after a short break, and we'll do a little bit more on this New Hampshire focus. Talk to some people in Nashua about this. You can join us, too, at 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Do you favor Boston's Olympic bid or not? Tell us why. 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, Boston's Olympic bid, dream or nightmare. We've been hearing from all sides today in The Exchange. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Mark Arsenault, reporter for The Boston Globe, is with us for the hour, and we've been hearing from all sorts of voices on this topic. And Mark, before we go to some New Hampshire voices who've been looking at this, I did want to ask you something. You know, we heard from Rich Davey that, hey, a lot of the infrastructure that Boston would need is here already, given the heavy concentration of colleges and universities, the dorms, the subway, the sports facilities associated with the colleges. Has anybody, Mark, broken this down piece by piece? Like, you know, 50% already built, 50% needs to be built. Has anybody done it that specifically yet, or is it still too early?
No, sure. The 2024 people have made those proposals about how many temporary facilities need to be built. I don't have the numbers at the top of my head, but there'll be 10 or 12 or more temporary facilities built. Many of the college facilities around Boston, Gannis Arena, BU, for example, the Boston Convention Center on South Boston would hold six events. So, yeah, they've laid out those plans.
And is it big enough? Are those college facilities big enough for the huge crowds that the Olympics attracts?
Well, the Olympics attracts different size crowds for different events.
Sure.
I would say that judo is not going to do as well as sort of the men's basketball final, right? So the smaller, more niche events are going to end up, you know, like judo, for example, and indoor volleyball are going to end up in places like the convention center, which can be, parts of it can be walled off and stands can be added, and they can be turned into small venues of between 8,000 and 15,000 people. You know, big events like swimming, especially in the United States, where it's very popular, would need, you know, 18,000, 20,000 just for that event. So the aquatic center, whether it ends up being built as a temporary facility or in partnership with some college, which is, I think, the hopes of 2024, then that would have to be significantly bigger, at least for the purposes of the Games,
sure,
under their plans.
All right, let's take a call. This is Mark in Portsmouth. Hi, Mark. Go ahead. You're on the Exchange. Thanks for calling in. Okay, I guess we lost Mark there. Mark, I hope you call back. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Mark Arsenault, an email from Rosie came in before the show. She says, Olympics in Boston seems like such a bad idea. Can you imagine the traffic? Boston is bad enough to drive through as it is. She says, I guess it's good for the service industry, tourism, etc., but I can't wrap my head around this being held in Boston. Where will everyone go? There is only so much room in Boston. She's got a point, Mark. Boston is not a, a sprawled out city. It's pretty compact.
Indeed. This is something the organizers are just going to have to convince people, if they want support for this, that it's possible to do. One thing that they've already said is, when you design the games, you don't design parking. So the stadium, for example, which currently planned for Wydad Circle, which is right off 93, just sort of south of the main part of the city, it wouldn't have parking other than handicap parking. So people would have to get there either on foot or by public transportation. And I believe that the overall plan is to capture people, capture cars in the sort of the outer ring of the T. So you park, you know, park out on Route 128 or something, and then take the T into the city, and don't bring your car. At least that is their hope, and they've got to make that case.
So they're really not just suggesting that these be walkable and geared toward public transit. They're saying unless you're disabled, you have to do this.
Well, if there's no parking, then it really doesn't do you any good to bring a 2,000 or 4,000-pound anchor around into the city. So, yeah, that is the plan.
You know, one of your colleagues earlier this week reported on the reaction among Massachusetts lawmakers kind of getting back into gear in the new year, and some of them feeling a little testy, Mark, about just being left out of the process, I think is how your colleague put it. How are Massachusetts lawmakers feeling about this?
Well, overall, I think there's considerable support among public officials. There hasn't been a lot of negative reaction. In fact, we've done stories about how little negative reaction there is about from public officials on this, but there is a concern about paying for it. I mean, people, I think, in public office are generally supportive of the mayor's vision, but they don't want to have to pay for it.
So that's the concern. Where's the money going to come from?
Correct. Right. Or how do they intend to pay for all these plans?
Well, we talked a moment ago, Mark, about some possibilities for the Granite State out of this. Boston is not that far away, especially from our southern tier. Joining us now with more on that are two people. Charlie Arlinghouse is with us, president of the Josiah Bartlett Center and public policy columnist for the New Hampshire Union Leader. Charlie, good to have you. Welcome back.
Hi.
And also with us, Tom Galligani. He's Nashua's Economic Development Director. And Tom, thank you also for being with us. We appreciate it.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Well, and Tom, I want to start with you. What are people in Nashua saying about the possibility of a Boston Olympics? From what I've read, you're pretty excited there.
Yeah, people are definitely excited here in Nashua. I mean, as you probably can guess, Nashua has really strong ties with the greater Boston area. You know, probably half of our working population commutes into Massachusetts, and since the highway was extended back in the early 70s, we're strongly linked with Boston. When Boston does well, we do well. When news happens in Boston, certainly half of our population knows what's happening anyhow.
Well, they should be listening to NHPR as well, and I hope they are, Tom, but about the news. But you said half our working population commutes to Boston. Could be a commuter nightmare, no? Are people worried about that?
I don't sense that, and the reason why is that you know, we're expecting that the Summer Olympics is going to happen in the summer. It's either going to be happening in late July or in August, and that's generally a slow time for traffic. People are on vacation. People are doing other things, so you don't see the traffic crunches heading down to Route 3 like you do in other times of year.
And, Tom, I have heard that Nashua's downtown, which had been doing pretty well, is now struggling. I wonder if there are hopes there for some downtown revival linked to the Olympics.
Well, I wouldn't say downtown is struggling. I think we've had some notable closures in the last couple of weeks, which tends to happen in January, but we've had a lot of new businesses opening up. So we're treading water, definitely, and cautiously optimistic, but definitely there's a sense that the Olympics bring something really interesting and exciting to the plate, and So it's got people thinking differently and how Nashua can tap in to this potential, to this really exciting international event.
And Tom, just stay on the line with us if you could. Charlie Arlinghouse, I want to bring you into this. You wrote recently that New Hampshire should not spend, to quote you, one thin dime on Olympics-related infrastructure. What kind of spending were you thinking about, Charlie?
Well, first of all, happy to be here and bah humbug. I'm here to rain on people's parade. The Olympics are a wonderful event, and I enjoy watching it on television. Not that I would consider going, because it would be a nightmare. And I feel proud of the Olympics, and very, very sorry for whatever city was dragooned into putting it on and losing their shirt over it.
Dragooned,
and I don't. They do it because they think, oh, this is going to be so great. This is wonderful, and yet. You know, as everybody has said, no one thinks about, well, how are we going to pay for this? Well, you're not going to pay for it, really. You're going to spend a ton of money and lose a lot of money over it, and for the honor of having had the Olympics. And New Hampshire shouldn't be part of that honor. I say one thin dime. We shouldn't fix up any stadiums. We shouldn't, no politician or city official, frankly, at any point should say to themselves, you know what, maybe we could do like a training facility, or maybe we could get fencing. Or, you know, some sort of the badminton final, because, you know, nobody else is going to want that. Because whatever money we spend, we won't get back. If we don't spend a dime on this, then it is conceivable that that weekend or the weeks of the Olympics, a whole bunch of people will come up and shop, because we still don't have a sales tax, and our malls are still a great deal. And Nashua should hope the Pheasant Lane Mall gets a lot of business over this, or the outlets in Merrimack, or whatever you want to do. But if we spend money up front, it's just not coming back. And as for commuters, the commuters don't need to worry about the Olympics in those 2 weeks and what a nightmare that's going to be, because they can take a vacation. But if there's a lot of construction, 80,000 people from New Hampshire commute into Massachusetts every day. Those people are not going to be very happy for about 2 years.
So it's sort of big dig two, some people have said, Charlie. And that's the nightmare, not necessarily 2 weeks of the Olympics.
Oh, that's exactly right. It's the construction nightmare that's the problem.
You know, I wanted to ask you, Tom, some people are saying, hey, you know, they've been working for a long time with the idea of connecting Boston to Nashua by rail. Rich Davey talked about this. He's a big fan, former transit official in the Bay State. Does the prospect of Boston hosting the Olympics boost the prospect of getting that long-awaited train line up to Nashua?
I think it does. I think it raises people's awareness of the kind of infrastructure projects that are already being planned. Certainly that's the intention of the organizers in Boston, is to kind of use what we have and use what we're planning on having. And so I see that similarly here in New Hampshire. It's a project that many of us in southern New Hampshire have long talked about and see the obvious benefits of connecting more closely with Boston. And so, certainly that should give us a boost for our bid to expand passenger rail.
And one last question for you, Tom. Is there some amount that you think the state of New Hampshire should invest in any of these infrastructure improvements, be it rail or whatever? Or is this just kind of Nashua working on its own? What do you think?
No, I think it's critical for the whole state. I mean, the state needs to provide some portion of it. And I think there's a... The rail feasibility report is due out in the next couple of weeks, so I think we'll get a better understanding of what the costs are going to be. But, you know, it's always been billed. It's something that, for it to happen, we're going to need state participation, we're going to need city participation, we're going to need participation from New Hampshire in order to get a big infrastructure improvement that will benefit New Hampshire.
Okay. Tom, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
That's Tom Galligani. He's Nashua's Economic Development Director. Charlie Arlinghouse, it was good to talk to you. We'll talk to you again.
Thanks.
That's Charlie Arlinghouse, president of the Josiah Bartlett Center. And Mark Arsenault, just to finish out with you, it was interesting to hear both of those gentlemen talk about New Hampshire impacts. What about other places near Boston, not right in Boston, but suburbs of Boston? Rhode Island, for example, is just as close as New Hampshire, if not closer. What are sort of the outer rings of the city saying this might include for them?
Well, some of the cities right around Boston are actually included in the venue plan. For example, Somerville, where the mayor is very interested in creating a bicycle culture, is at least at this point considered the place to put the BMX track and the velodrome, which is the inside indoor cycling track. On the other hand, Cambridge, which is where Harvard, MIT, there's a number of venues planned for that area. The Cambridge City Council has been very cool to this idea. Down in Rhode Island, the Dunkin' Donuts Center is a potential venue for, I believe it's been talked about, for some of maybe the early round basketball games. It's possible they could hold early round basketball games and baseball games, if baseball is back in the Olympics by 2024, in stadiums as far as New York or Philadelphia.
Wow, that's not close.
No, well, I mean, obviously that's not walkable. but under
right.
the new...
You can't take the T there.
No, under the new guidelines that the IOC approved in December, they have allowed or at least say that they're going to encourage more regional bids if necessary in order to keep the cost down. One interesting thing about, and Rich Davey mentioned these new IOC guidelines, is they haven't been tested before. And the 2024 is really the first time they're going to be tested. And I think one of the big questions is they say they're going to encourage more temporary facilities, more sustainable Olympics, less expensive Olympics, but how do they enforce that sort of on themselves? And is it possible that if Boston submits a small, relatively stripped down bid, is it just merely going to be at a competitive disadvantage with a foreign bid heavily backed by the government that's promising spectacular facilities?
And what's next in the Olympic decision-making process, Mark? We talked about it real early on, but just to put a fine point on it, what is next before Boston, gets to be the winner or not?
Well, we'll see when the next, between now and September, there'll be much more development of the Boston bid, which will go into the IOC in, I believe, in September. It can be somewhat refined for a little bit of time after that. Other cities around the world are going to be doing the same thing. I spoke recently to your counterpart with sort of the NPR of Germany, and they're working on in bids, and they may put forward the city of Berlin, which hosted in 1936, or the city of Hamburg, and they're going to make that decision probably by March. Rome has already said that it intends to bid. Paris, it would be the 100th anniversary of the 1924 Paris Olympics. They need to decide if they're going to bid. Budapest could bid. Istanbul could bid. These countries are going to make up their mind, get their bids in by September. If there's a large number of bids, the IOC may chop it down in 2016 to, a manageable 4 or 5, and then they will vote at a meeting scheduled for the middle of 2017 in Lima, Peru. The IOC Congress, about 102 members, will vote, determine the host city. There's four Americans on the IOC. They will not be allowed to vote, assuming Boston is one of the candidate cities. None of the IOC members are allowed to vote if their home country has a city in the running. So we can't count on Boston can't count on support from those four members, but it's fair throughout the IOC.
And one last question for you, Mark. What would be the impact on that bid, in competition with those other international cities, if the citizens of Boston clearly came out in a referendum and said, no way?
Well, I think a referendum vote against the Olympics would be, depending on the referendum, could be fatal. If I talked to Mr. Falchuk, who's preparing for the statewide referendum, and he is working on a referendum that would restrict public money going to the bid. And if that was to pass, then depending on the language, then the 2024 group and Mayor Walsh may be able to proceed, depending on how that is worded. What Falchuk wants to make sure that he wants to restrict public money, but not, I mean, if you don't want to accidentally forbid public infrastructure projects that are already going ahead, such as, there's an extension of the Green Line that's going forward that people really want.
Regardless of whether the Olympics come, yeah.
Yeah, regardless of the Olympics. So depending on how he crafts the question, I think that would make a difference. Whether or not the Olympics can go forward under the language of that question, whether public money is banned or not, I guess we'll see. I mean, Germany is planning a referendum.
Yeah, it's not unusual for cities to have that. Mark, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate you giving us your time.
You're welcome.
That's Mark Arsenault, reporter for the Boston Globe. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. The senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producer is Faith Mikesell. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoy.